This is the Canucks Central Postgame Show.
Canucks win the draw in their own zone. Bluger couldn't clear it. McLaughlin threw it to the net. It's deflected. They score. Mark McLaughlin just turned and fired that on goal and changed directions. Pastrnak into the Vancouver zone, trying to behind the net. Got a wraparound. He scores. David Pastrnak beats Thatcher Demko by outweighting him around the net. And makes it 5-0 Boston just 26 seconds into the third period.
With instant reaction from the players and coaches.
Marchand trying to center a pass. Lindholm gave it away to Miller. Into the slot for Sasson. He scores! Max Sasson has his first NHL goal in his 10th career game.
Have your say on the official home of the Canucks. Sportsnet 650 and the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Canucks 5-1 loss on home ice against the Boston Bruins, and this is the Canucks Central Postgame Show presented by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment. Satyar Shah with Bick Nizar going to bring in Landon Ferraro into the conversation in just a moment. Called the game alongside Brendan Batchelor. A dud on home ice yet again. The struggles at Rogers Arena continue for the Vancouver Canucks. They've only won 5 of their first 16 games, and you know, multi-goal losses on home ice are tough to take, especially this season, especially after the year they had this past year. Grab a phone line if you'd like, 604-280-0650, or toll-free, 1-888-275-0650. You can also hit us up on our Dunbar Lumber text inbox, 650-650. And, you know, it's one of those games where you had hoped the Canucks would show up and build on what they showed the previous game against the Panthers. We spoke about this on the pregame show, Landon, that, you know, it was a great performance, but you build on it and forge it into your identity. That didn't happen tonight. And I know the coach mentioned with Lankinen and Forsberg out, a bug is going through the team. But because they've had so many duds on home ice, it's hard to just say, well, they were sick tonight, because we've seen stuff like this. It's not the first game that they've had that has been flat on home ice this season.
No, it hasn't. And the tough part there is, as you look at it as a whole, like, you always want to be able to, you know, start stringing together some good games, and especially at home where they have struggled this year. But now it turns into a situation where it's just that Florida game is, you know, guys, like, that, remember that game we played that was so good? We have to get back to that. It doesn't turn into something where it's, you know, we had that game, and even if they would have lost this game but they played well, then they're like, okay, we're still building. It was just Boston's night. You can kind of justify it that way, but when you come out and, you know, play the way that they did, in the sense of they didn't play with authority. They didn't really put that extra push in. Every time that there was a puck kind of getting chipped in or tipped in, there was only one guy going after it. It's like the conversations we had, you know, at the beginning of the season when there wasn't much support. And without support in this league, it's really, really tough.
I'm a little, you know, flustered and befuddled to even, you know, what to take away from this game, because, again, it's been such a regular occurrence. This is now the sixth time they've given up 5 goals on home ice, and this is game 16 on home ice. So that's 38% of the time you're seeing a lot of goals go into the home net. And it's tough to pull something out of this, and especially on the back of that Florida game, just as you mentioned there, Lennon, just like you want to start to build something. And I like those games, you know, as we saw against Florida, because at least it's proof of concept. Because you said you can always go back to it and say, hey, we've done it. But for it to slip so far so fast, that's a big worry, that, you know, how quickly that they lost their game in just a span of a couple of days.
And I think the other part that's tough here too, and it's almost, again, like a player that we've half forgotten about because he really hasn't been in the lineup this year, but Forsberg came in that Florida game, yeah. and he didn't just have an okay game. Like, yeah, from the very first shift that he was out there, he had 2 great pinches holding pucks in. He had a couple good blocks. He had a couple, we were talking about it on the PK, how he was perfect, yeah, on his angle and made all those shots really easy for Lankinen, and because he took away the entire far side of the net, mm-hmm, and just left a skinny little portion on the short side. Like, a player like that can help really kind of calm things down on the back end. Not saying that him alone would have been the difference in the game tonight, because they were far off from the level.
It's a simple thing that felt very noticeable tonight, and he did all the simplest things that executed to greater plays, and that was missing throughout the course of the evening. And you're right, it's not just him to stabilize everything, but every player out there has the ability to shield a player and protect a puck and slide it to someone else, and it just wasn't executed tonight.
Yeah, and I think the crazy part, me and Batch talked about it towards the end there on the broadcast, is, you know, the game ends up 5-1, and yet you can go back through Thatcher Demko's game and point out probably another four easy goals that if it wasn't him in net, or, you know, the way Lankinen's been playing, like, they're down 9.
Yeah.
Like, there, like, he made a couple. He had the breakaway save. He had 3 or 4 where he's in the full splits having to make unbelievable
two
saves.
2-on-1
on the
Marchand.
Like, there's just way too many chances and good chances that the Canucks gave up. And even with Thatcher, or with Demko giving up 5, like, he had a pretty good game.
I thought he did, too. I know people are talking about how they think Demko also looks rusty tonight and perhaps should have done better. I mean, I guess you can always quibble and look at situations, but I don't think the Canucks played with any level of urgency or tenacity or had anything going for them for it even to matter. Like, even if you want to point to the goaltending and say, well, you know, I wish he would have made a couple more saves, the Canucks getting the one goal was way more than they probably should have got anyways. I mean, how many good scoring chances did they have, like quality scoring chances in this game? I can count them on one hand, and of those 5, only 2 are truly high dangers. Like, not even, like, how many do you remember saying this was, like, a sure goal chance? Bluger trying to stuff 2 in?
I was going to say the Bluger.
That's pretty much it?
Yeah, the Bluger one-timer, Hoglander in, right in front, but it was a little far from him.
Yeah.
Like, and again, like, nothing against those guys. Like, Bluger has been great this year. Sasson gets his goal and was good again tonight. But we're talking about the guys in the bottom 6, and that is great. You need them to really be good contributors, and that's how you have a good team, is your top end plays really well, and then your bottom 6 can really be the difference makers. They can't be the leading drivers, especially in a game where you know Boston's coming in after getting embarrassed not once but twice, giving up a lot of goals. They're going to come out excited to play, especially it doesn't matter who's in the lineup. That Boston-Vancouver rivalry, mm-hmm. even though it's coast-to-coast, man, you feel it right away. As soon as you put on one of those jerseys, you know that you're going into a battle, regardless of who's there or if they've been there for a long time.
Or it's been 13 years, right? Like, the crowd's still into it. So every time Brad Marchand touched the puck, they're reacting, so you can see there's going to be some juice in the building.
And the funny part there is, and I think Friedman said it on the intermission show for Sportsnet there, that Brad Marchand, as soon as he hears those boos, oh, his night made now.
Yeah.
Like, that guy lives for moments like that. And, you know, there's a reason that he's been in the league this long, and now he's the captain. You know, you look at their past captains, it's Zdeno Chara, then to Patrice Bergeron. Like, he's the next guy up. Like, those are two Hall of Famers. And Marchand's put a heck of a career together himself,
yeah.
And he's kind of, in a sense, he's like JT Miller, that he is the emotional leader of that team. He runs hot. He's very active and vocal in the dressing room. He's going to let you know if he's not happy with how you're playing. But he's also one of those guys that will be the first one to say, like, no, I don't have it either right now, and I need to step up. And you know, it's tough to play against that right now.
Yeah, absolutely. And there's so much reaction on the text inbox. New West, Nick, why can't Pettersson produce when Miller is in the lineup? Others texting about Pettersson. What's going on with the $11.6 million player? Not good enough. I mean, it's text after text, and these things happen. And hey, that's the gift and the curse of getting paid a lot of money and when you are struggling. But his game the last couple haven't looked dangerous. He looked dangerous before, you know, JT returned. And I'm not making this about JT and him, but the last couple games, even last game, we talked about how he played to the team identity and they did a good job defensively, but there's no offense. And again, tonight, there's like no offense there. And I think that's what's perplexing, is why are they not able to even generate some looks? I can understand you generate looks and don't score. That happens in hockey. But at least get the opportunities. And the fact that they're not happening these past two games is perplexing.
And the frustrating part of it, I would say, is, you know, he has been very good lately. And I do agree that last game against Florida and tonight have been a bit quieter nights for him. And we were talking about it on the power play, especially before, of, you know, the next part for Pettersson to get his game continually moving is when he gets it on the left or on the right flank, is to start attacking and be confident in your shot. Pettersson's got an unbelievable shot, but you kind of forget about it from time to time because he is such a pass first type player. And tonight I was actually really, really excited when I saw his first shift. They turned a puck over, they go in, and he doesn't even look for a pass. He takes that shot right away.
Yeah.
I'm like, oh, okay, like, I think he might be into it. And then before you know it, things aren't going right, so then you're going to try and start making plays.
Yeah.
he's passing up shots, and he wasn't the only one that was passing up shots looking for the extra pass tonight. And I think we can all agree that the Canucks aren't made to be that extra pass team. Like, they're a team that are built to overwhelm and build off each other's lines and just continue that play and start to overwhelm teams that way, not amazing play after amazing play.
You kind of made the point of my question about, because they passed up a lot of shots and it was contagious. In your mind, in your experience, like, what's the genesis of that? Like, once it happens, everyone starts kind of doing it, or is it just trying to make the quote-unquote better play when it's not there? Because it happened a lot tonight.
Honestly, yeah. It's funny how it happens, and I believe that it's, you want, you know, you're down a couple goals, nothing seems to be going your way, regardless, it doesn't matter what the circumstances are, you just know this isn't working, and you have Swayman in net, who is a pretty good goaltender, mm-hmm. and you're starting to think, like, oh, I'm not going to beat him on a clean shot, like, we have to make an unbelievable play to get through, because that's how we feel right now, is we're not up to their level at the moment. We're going to need to make something amazing happen to be able to put it in. And it's just like, I know, I think I said it in the last post game, of when you try to make something perfect, it doesn't matter if it's hockey or anything yeah. else in life, you try and be perfect at something too much, it doesn't work at all. You just need to simplify, get the puck to the net, get the puck into the blue, give your wingers or, you know, your yeah. forwards a chance to get a rebound, start getting some greasy goals. It doesn't have to be a highlight.
No, and you know what? It's interesting, because I thought the Canucks' best chances were chances that never materialized. There were opportunities to have them. There was a couple of rush opportunities where Pettersson doesn't make the pass fast enough, and then the opportunity is gone. There was one where a pass was made too late, and there's a couple other ones where you just looked off the wrong guy. And even in the first shift that the Suter, Garland, and Joshua line had, Suter's in front of the net, Garland's wheeling behind the net, and he's right there open for him. If he passes the puck to him, he doesn't see him, just kind of keeps skating around the net. It's like, they just didn't see the ice well tonight, or they're just waiting too long to make plays, which was confusing considering how decisive they were the other night. And you can't even say on those plays, because they were plays where they weren't being pressured, that it was the opposition forcing them to make the other play. That's what really stood out to me in a weird way, that how come they just weren't seeing the ice as well tonight?
I honestly, like, it's hard to put that into words.
Right.
Like, as soon as you're talking through that, like, I can feel it in my heart, like, in my chest of, like, I know exactly what you're saying, but it's hard to put words to it. There's some nights where, and this isn't an excuse or anything like that, but there are some nights that you're just, like, your eyes are a little off. Everything just seems a little weird, and where the puck's coming around the boards, you know exactly, especially on your home ice where you know the boards and where there's the little bounces, because as much as the rinks are the same, there are little differences.
Right.
And so you know exactly where it's going to come out, and all of a sudden it kind of takes a hop in a different spot. Like, things just kind of are off that way. The other thing I would point out is the amount of times, and it wasn't just the Canuck guys, Boston had some issue with it as well, but it was definitely, you know, heavily on the Canucks side of guys just going to pivot and falling, guys trying to turn to get back into plays and falling. Like, it just looked like a team that just didn't have it. As simple as that is, some nights you just simply don't have it. You can try and break it down more and more, but it really is just that simple sometimes. I think the other one, too, of you're talking the plays that were just a little off was shots from the point tonight.
Yeah.
And, you know, there was a lot that missed the net, but even Quinn Hughes, who is one of the best, if not the best player in the league at walking the line, finding that lane, like, he was hitting the second defenseman multiple times tonight, where generally those are getting through. Like, it's again, like, everything was just off. It's amazing how off by an inch can make a game feel impossible to get into.
To that point, Quinn Hughes, 3 shots on goal, but another 10 that blocked or missed. 8 were blocked and 2 missing the net in total. And again, this might be a lofty question, but in a game like this, it did feel like even simple things like puck support were off, right? And when everyone's a little bit slow to the paces here, suddenly, you know, a pass that should be an easy out up the wall or something like that, like, everything was just a little bit off. And I don't know, like, in a situation like that, you know, we've heard Rick talking, like, manage the game. Like what element of that do you try to prescribe in a game like this?
I would say, and I brought it up on the broadcast as well, of almost it felt like one of the games from the beginning of the year where every puck that was moved up the ice, it was to a man on an island. And whether he was catching the pass and putting it in or just tipping it in, the Boston defenseman just skated back. There's no one there. He picks it up and he starts skating out of the zone. The few times, especially on the Bluger line, because they kind of had the most consistent momentum through the game, was they chip it in. Well, the first forechecker goes in, but that second guy's right there to hop on that loose puck that the first guy creates. If you don't, again, we started over the post-game show about this, of if you don't have support in this league and you're not a guy that's named Connor McDavid, like, it's pretty tough to just make things happen one-on-five by yourself. Like, you need to have your buddies around you. Like, life's always better when your buddies are here.
Yeah, well, and that's exactly it, right? And they have one more home game coming up. It's on Monday against the Colorado Avalanche, 7:30 start, and then they head on the road for a couple of games. You know, it hasn't been good enough on home ice. It doesn't get any easier. I know Colorado's had some ups and downs, but they still have McKinnon, they still have Rantanen, and they still have Cale Makar. They're trying to shore up their goaltending. There's still a lot there. You got to be able to close this homestand out with at least, even if you don't win the game, it has to be a convincing effort before you leave these home fans for that little road trip.
100%. And you definitely want to put a good effort in because it's your home ice and it's been a bit of a struggle. And you want, like you just said, you want the fans to leave and say, you know what, like, we're proud of our guys tonight. But take all of that out. The dressing room needs that right now. Like, they need to be able to go on the road and look back on their last effort and say, you know what, like, I didn't circle in my own end. I stopped and started, and that got me to be in the right lane. When I put a puck into the offensive zone, I didn't chip it to the far side where there's no one on that side. I put it a soft chip into the near side where my guy can go in and get it. Like, I remember, not to go back to Marchand, but I remember one of my first games, and I had never been told this before. I never even thought about it, but I was somehow out there with him for a little bit, and I threw a chip into the zone, and it was on the opposite side of him. And when he gets back to the bench, he was, you know, he was nice about it, but he said, he's like, that's a completely useless dump. Like, I'd rather you just grab the puck and throw it into the bench at that point. He's like, you have to put it into a spot that I can actually go get it.
Right.
And tonight, the Canucks didn't do that. Like, that needs to come back into the game. It's amazing how just having support in the offensive zone, just that alone will give you a couple more looks a game.
Well, just like how fluid they looked in the neutral zone on Thursday against Florida versus what it looked like tonight. And for all those moments of, because again, look, they do chip and chase, right, a lot more than your average teams. And they've been first to puck sometimes. But tonight, like, that element was just completely evaporated. And it looks so difficult all night.
And to expand on that, I would say, you know, going back to the Florida game, comparing it to this one, I 100% agree on the offensive side getting through the neutral zone. But on the defensive side as well, like, they clogged it up so well. And like, Florida's got some fast big players that can really push through through pressure, and they had nothing. And tonight it was like, wasn't even
the Zacha goal is the perfect example, right? Like, there's two players there that can close on Pastrnak, and they both peel away, and suddenly this pass goes right through Pedersen's legs, and you think, there you go, like you can pressure the puck, you're allowed to do that, and they just vacate the space.
Before we let you go, Max Sasson gets his first career goal. I wish it was under better circumstances. I mean, I'm sure he wanted to celebrate it, but it's tough when you're down 5-0, scores the goal. But there's a real bottom line to his game, right? 2 assists the other night, 5 points now in 10 games. He's outproduced all the other rookies that have played so far. And, you know, he's really bringing something tangible to the team right now.
Yeah, and I would say that, you know, the other rookies have come up and done a pretty good job. But the difference, one, he's a little bit older, right? Like, he's a couple years older than the other guys that have been coming up. But at the same time, he is the most he is the closest to the same player in the American League that he is in the NHL.
Yeah. Right.
It's not the highest skill. He has skill for sure. We've seen it. But the game for him is effort, pace, hard on the boards, and he can make a play after he pulls up in the offensive zone. And for a guy to get his first, again, like, I know everyone can agree that obviously it's a huge moment for him and everything, but man, like that feeling of you're sitting on the bench after, and I guarantee he had the same exact thought, because it doesn't matter what point of the game and what the score is, he's sitting there and he's like, holy crap, like I actually just put a puck in the net in the NHL.
Right.
Like I've thought about this, I've talked about it with my dad, I've talked about it with my family, how cool that would be. Like that's, duh. Like I got butterflies sitting on about it, because it just reminds you of your own and how much work you put into it. Like it's a massive moment for him.
Yeah, it's fantastic.
I just like, you know, he talked last post-game as well, and he mentioned, you know, the first couple of games, you have that adrenaline, and there was an awareness of like, hey, it tailed off. Now I got to try to solve what the next problem is and how to stay in the league. And yeah, you keep having a night like this where you score a goal. It's a big boost.
Yeah, 100%. Landon, great stuff as always, man. Always appreciate your thoughts here on the post-game show as well. And we look forward to chatting with you coming up on Thursday on Connect Central as always.
All right, guys. Have fun dissecting the rest of this for the time being today.
We're going to talk about Christmas movies and people's wish lists.
Hey,
tonight.
We have Coach coming up. Jim Rutherford's on After Hours, so we have a lot to dig into. Plus, Elliot Friedman talked about some trade rumors with the Canucks. Vinny Desharnais. So we have some things to chew on the next 90 minutes here. And that is the game review brought to you by BC Honda Dealers. Love a good save, then you'll love the all-new, all-electric Honda Prologue EV. Score up to $10,000 in combined rebates. Visit bchonda.ca. Bick, before we hit the break, and we'll get to more phone calls on the other side as well, what are the people saying on the Dunbar Lumber text inbox, 650-650?
650-650. Oh, boy. It's a lot happening in the inbox. This one from Brett in Coquitlam, who's on the SkyTrain right now. Appreciate you following along on the stream. I've been to some terrible games this season. Devils 6-0, the Blues loss, the Bruins 5-1 loss. Would be nice to see these guys actually show up for once. That is Brett on the SkyTrain. New S Nick starting to believe the Canucks are the 2023 Seattle Kraken, who had a good run in 2022, slipped back last year.
Ouch.
This one, Bernie, pathetic, embarrassing display on national TV. It's embarrassing being a Canucks fan right now. That's Bernie in Kelowna, 650-650.
Yeah, this one here says, Saturday night, Boston Bruins at home, Kelly Sutherland. Was kind of a scheduled loss, with this unsigned text message has to say. All right, keep your thoughts coming into our text inbox, 650-650. Let's take one phone call before we hit the break, and let's go to Langley, where we have Lee on the line. Lee, thanks for calling in, buddy. What are your thoughts here tonight after a 5-1 loss against the Bruins?
Hey, guys. Oh, man. Last time I called, I think I called during the Islanders game, and that was also a stinker performance. And that game, I don't know if you remember my phone call.
Yeah, we do.
I was extremely passionate about how disappointed I was. This time, I'm not even disappointed, and that should be the worrying part. I feel like I came to expect that the Canucks would just throw another stinker. Especially, like, after their best performance, you just knew the Canucks would throw another stinker at home. Immediately after, because that's all this team has shown, just multiple terrible efforts at home and incredibly inconsistent. And this team, this is not a compliment at all, but this team reminds me of Tottenham Spurs, about inconsistent and just disappointed they are. And you know that I'm a Spurs fan.
I know.
I can wake up in the morning, watch the Spurs lose. And then I go watch the game at night, and I get even more sad, because it's just, it's like, mind-blowing how, like, inconsistent and just, like, terrible efforts this team has constantly shown. And I just say as well, at least on TV, it seemed like there was a lot of empty seats. And I get that it was windy today, but the team is playing terribly at home. The prices for these games are ridiculous. They're, like, $170, $180. I got student rush prices for today's game. And they were $109 for one ticket. Last year, I got two tickets for $80 combined. The prices, like, no wonder why some of these seats just look empty as hell, like, a lot. Look extremely empty. Anyways, congrats to Max Sasson. Made his joke to Sat earlier, but big goal. Cut down the lead to 42.
You got it. Thanks for the phone call. It's like the Chris Paul
when he scored down 53 or whatever.
Huge three to cut the lead of 42. Good stuff there from Lee. I understand the frustration, especially for fans who've been in the building here. I'm only seeing 5 wins on home ice through the 16 so far. All right, we'll break down the game more. We'll hear from the head coach, plus Jim Rutherford, and a lot more on the Canucks Central Postgame Show, presented by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment. Let Kubota do your heavy lifting. Visit them online at dleamc.com. More coming up next on the home of your Canucks, Sportsnet 650.
Hey, it's Vic Nizar. Have your say and join me on The People's Show with big takes and even bigger bets weekdays 3 to 4 on Sportsnet 650 or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is where you talk Canucks. You're listening to the Canucks Central Postgame Show on the official home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650 and the Sportsnet Radio Network.
McAvoy, right wing for Pastrnak, into the Vancouver zone, driving behind the net, got a wraparound, he scores! David Pastrnak beats Thatcher Demko by outweighting him around the net and makes it 5-0 Boston just 26 seconds into the third period.
And we were just talking last period about David Pastrnak getting off to, for him, a slow start scoring-wise. He's been getting his assists, but not many goals have gone in for him. McAvoy does a good job of carrying the puck up. As soon as he gets to just about the blue line, he chips it out to his right to Pastrnak with a full head of steam. He makes that fake little pass shot in, which freezes Demko, and he's able to open up his hips, get around as a righty to where it's a bit easier to hook it back into the net. 5-0, 26 seconds into the third period.
Canucks go on to lose 5-1 on home ice against the Boston Bruins. The Bruins, of all teams, beating the Canucks 5-1 on home ice. And this is the Canucks Central Postgame Show presented by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment. Satyar Shah with Bick Nizar. And as always, get your thoughts in to our Dunbar Lumber text inbox, 650-650. You can also grab a phone line, 604-280-0650, or toll-free, 1-888-275-0650. And, you know, we have a lot of reaction on the text inbox. We'll get to the phone boards as well. We are going to get you to thoughts of the Canucks president, Jim Rutherford, who was just on After Hours. I had a lot to say. We'll break that all down and play it. Plus, we are going to get the thoughts of the Canucks head coach right away as well, as soon as that becomes available to us. But before we all do all that, Bick, a lot of reaction on the text inbox, lots of frustration about what's going on with the Vancouver Canucks right now.
Yeah, 650-650. This one, it's not acceptable. The lack of effort, the slow starts, they played half-assed when the game was getting away. That one is from Dave. This one, Roman in Abbotsford, one of the team's defining characteristics last season was the resiliency they always showed. They had an us-versus-the-world mentality. Think about the comeback wins. Today, they can't do something as simple as show up for their goalie. Second time, obviously, Thatcher Demko in net. This one, I'm so very tired of paying for this. I would suspect a ticket-paying fan on this one, and this one from Vince the Teacher. Saturday night ruined. Had tons of people over to watch the Canucks game. Boston sucks. Canucks just killed Florida. What do we get? A no-show. No excuses. Glad I didn't pay to go to the game.
Yeah, there's a lot of frustration from the fans, and I can understand why, because of what is going on here on home ice. And I understand that, you know, you can't always have your A game, but the fact that they haven't had it so often on home ice is the most perplexing thing. And as much as we can sit here and talk about, you know, no Derek Forbort, and I think it made a difference because there was a few times in the center or middle of the ice they weren't protecting it very well, but they didn't generate enough for you to be like, well, this one absence was the difference. Or even like tonight, let's say you can make the excuse of, okay, there's no Filip Hronek, right? And forget the whole bug thing, but let's just focus on, you know, missing Hronek. The game wasn't even close enough for you to say the difference was one player or two players, right? Like, you weren't even in the same stratosphere. At least be close to it, and then we can look at certain things perhaps being the difference that weren't there or ready for you. Like, yeah, I did not like the way Brännström played tonight. And had Forbort played, yeah, maybe they don't get scored on the second goal. But do you win this game? Do you go out and create more offensively? Forbort's not bringing that for you, right? Filip Hronek probably makes your blue line better. Yeah, you probably have a better team, but it was too listless all the way through. And like Landon mentioned, how often do you see the Canucks on even the simple dump-ins? The puck was nowhere near where it needed to be for them to be able to chase it down.
If okay, there's 18 skaters for each side.
Yes.
So 36 skaters this evening. If you just went through, okay, this guy was the best, this guy was the best, this guy's second best, third best, fourth best, how far down the list would you have to go to find a Canuck? Because I could probably argue at least the first seven are all Bruins.
Yeah, I would not disagree with that at all.
Like I think it might even be 10 guys.
I mean, and you know what the thing is too, the Canucks lost 5-1 in this game, and Quinn Hughes still played 27 minutes.
Yeah, yeah. Elias Pettersson, by the way, 15-10.
Yeah, and JT Miller played 19-10.
Yep. Now, yeah, again, like you're it's probably Quinn or Miller, but I don't think you're. I think you're taking 9 or 10 Bruins before you get to them.
I'm not even sure it was Quinn's best game overall.
I'm saying of the Canucks.
Yeah, I guess what you can say for him is, he wasn't on the ice. Like he was even on the mm-hmm. night. The only
and
player
he shot the puck a ton.
Yeah, the only two players were pluses, and it was JT Miller who was +1 and Noah Juulsen +1. Everybody else was either even or dash on the night.
And, yeah, like you know, I think you're taking Pasternak, you're taking Zacha, you're taking Lindholm, you're taking Geeky, who I thought was actually really good today. Kastlick had a chance. Andrew Peak was very fluid. Marchand, obviously. McAvoy was steady. Like, on and on and on. Like, you can just go through this, and you can find 10 guys that at least were ahead of what JT and Quinn did tonight.
Yeah, and Tone says, I was ready to leave during the second period. Couldn't even start a Hughes MVP chant because the whole team was bad tonight. That's Tone's texting in. And others, very similar, like a lot of the texts coming in are of that nature. This one, another EP40 no-show, epidemic non-performer. And, you know, him tonight, low man, 15-10, -2 on the evening. Was that the coach sending a message?
Well, defense? Good on that Zacha goal.
No, I mean,
that was really poor.
We've talked about his defensive play the last little bit. In the last game against Florida, he was really good defensively. Mm-hmm. Offensively, not a lot happened, but good defensively. But that defensive game still hasn't quite been there the past like handful of ones. We talked about this too, even some other games leading up to these last couple, that, hey, that line's been on the ice for a lot of goals against the past four or five games.
In the area that we focused on, because there's been a lot of, like, and then they had that stretch, 15 points in 10 games, a lot of texts coming in that are, you know, supportive, being like, hey, he's back, and our point has been, you know, the neutral zone play just doesn't look as solid as it's been from Pettersson, and that goal is a perfect picture of it. Like, he's got every opportunity to put pasta on the board, at least at the very least, like, stop the puck from being able to move. I'm not asking you to just drill the guy through the boards, but you got to prevent that pass from coming to the middle, and he peels off, and then, all right, if you're going to try to take the pass, you got to win the puck then, and it goes right through his feet, and it just looks dreadful. It just looks dreadful in that spot, and Zacha is just free and clear. And it's a moment like that. Got to be tight to your players, and you got to be willing to make a decision. Like, that's where all the complaints are going to come from of, you know, just doesn't look committed.
Yeah, 100%. Christy in North Van says, no offense to Juulsen, Brandstrom. No offense to Juulsen, Brandstrom, or Friedman, but at best maybe one of them is a 6D. But let's not forget that we're one-third of the way, so there's lots of hockey left. Peak in March, not in December. That's Christy in North Van. And I think it's always important to remember the season's not over. I know there's a lot of frustration, and we can be very critical of this game and this performance, and I think that deserves discussion, and I think we can talk about trends. It is still a long way to go in the season, and there's still a lot to figure out. The question is, do you have enough pieces here to turn it around, or at least be a contender again? Or are you a team that's taking a step back from last year? I do agree that you want to peak by the end of the year, and there's still so much runway left in the Canucks because of the points they've accumulated. They're not in a position where there's chasing the standings, where we're looking at it and saying, hey, if they don't start winning games mm-hmm. soon, the season's over. Like, they're not in that position. It's more about, can they improve? Are they able to become a contender, and can they peak, to Christie's point, as you head into the postseason? I mean, that's what I want to see happen, and we've seen some signs that maybe that can happen at some point, but it seems like one step forward, one step back, like the one against the Florida Panthers, where we were so excited about how they played, and we spoke so glowingly about their performance and how they have played such a clean, tough defensive game that looked a lot like last year, and then tonight, a complete departure from that again. So until you start stringing those together, it's hard to say you've figured it out and you're close as a team, and there's still a lot of work to do for these guys.
Yeah, so this is now, since that California road trip where they swept, right, this is 8-7-2 in that stretch, right? So it is, you know, one step forward, one step back. That's basically just a hair above 500, and this is a team that's supposed to be comfortably in those Pacific Division seeds. That's far more of a wild card stretch here, dating back to that Oilers game where they lost 7-3 on home ice.
Yeah, 100%. All right, we'll get to more of your text messages and your thoughts coming up in a moment, but let's take another phone call. Let's go to the phone boards and get Sam in Richmond on the line. Sam, thanks for calling in. What are your thoughts after this 5-1 loss on home ice for the Canucks?
Hey, Sam, how are you doing?
I'm doing well, buddy. What do you have for us tonight?
This is one word, just an absolute disgrace. What a no-show. What a terrible performance. I just noticed Rutherford said that we're two, I believe, I'll put in my words, but we're kind of two pieces away from being a contender. That says a lot to me. That really says a lot that this team obviously is not good enough. I don't know what's wrong with their leadership group. I just think that how can you not be ready for a game like Boston of all teams? Like, it's there's something wrong. Now, I know this game sort of feels like a game where someone could get fired. Not that I'm saying going down that bandwagon, but it really feels like it. I don't know what's wrong with Tockett. I don't know if he changed his system, but how can you go from such a great year of last year, if everything goes into the net this year, that nothing goes into the net? I don't know if it's their duck and chase or what. If maybe they have to change that. I think Albin really needs to start doing something here, because I heard that last text, but you get to a point, yes, there's lots of time in the season, but you also want, you don't want to be like 10 points or 8 points or 12 points behind the Oilers, who's right now third in the division, right? So the more games like this we lose, the more further and further we're going to lose a wild card position, and we'll not be in the playoff spot. So whatever the Canucks have to do, they have to do it quick, because it's something's not working. It's either in the dressing room. It could be, you know, I'm okay with trading one of our, not putting Hughes aside, Miller, Besser, Petey should be all fair game right now for trades. And I'm just getting sick of this win one, lose one. They need to be in the pack ready for the playoffs. And right now they're in the second last place for the wild card. And it's just getting tiring. And right now, am I going to pay $300 to watch this? Absolutely not. It's just a disgrace, and it's just awful. And I just hope Rutherford and Albin have a plan, because this is just awful. Thanks, guys.
Hey, thanks for the phone call. That is Sam calling in from Richmond. Very frustrated.
Drew in Port Moody has also texted in saying, feel like Tocchet will be on the hot seat sooner rather than later if this keep up. The tide sentiment among fans is slowly turning. And look, I think that's a measure too far too quickly. However, just to kind of illuminate the point, I mentioned earlier, this is the sixth loss this season that they've allowed five or more goals on home ice, okay? Actually, the sixth game, not even sixth loss. They all happen to be losses, but it's happened six times that they've given up five or more. The three times that's happened on home ice across the Canucks' history, 2022-23, 1984-85, 1983-84. Sorry, the times it happens at the higher percentage than it's happened right now, because it's 38% through these 16 games. The three times it's happened are those three seasons. There were coaching changes in all three of those seasons. So, again...
But what's their overall record those years? Like, it was probably not, like,
poor,
you know,
but
poor,
like,
yeah.
You start happening on home ice, it's a reflection of what's happening to the team in general.
Right.
If you were to bet what's to stay consistent right now, the home record or the away record?
Probably the away record. But the thing is, like, they shouldn't be bad on home ice. You know what I mean? Like, the thing that...
But it's happening.
You're right.
If it keeps happening, it's just going to raise the alarm. And that's why I think it's a measure too far. But you can only go so long. Like, if this continues till game 28 of the home
sure.
Game.
Sure. No, I agree with that.
Yeah. It's alarming.
Yeah. No, I mean, their home play has been alarming. But at the same time, like, I don't see this as, like, oh, the players have tuned out the head coach. Because if they have, then why are they playing so well on the road? You know what I mean?
Again,
like, to me,
I totally,
the logic doesn't compute on that one.
I'm just presenting the facts of what's happened in those seasons where they've had worse home ice performances.
For sure. Now, one thing that has happened on home ice, too, when you look through the stats on home ice, their save percentage on home ice is significantly worse than it is on the road. Now, a lot of that is the Shilov starts, where he got ventilated in a lot of these games. Demko's now played two games on home ice. In both games, obviously, there's been a lot of goals have gone in. I'm not sure you blame him with the quality of chances they've given up, so it goes a little bit, you know, both ways a little bit. But I don't think their poor home record is as sustainable as it's been, you know, because it's been so poor. But this, to your point and the point the callers are making, when you have these home performances, those are the ones that sound off the alarm bells. But because this team is in a position in their standings and how they've done on the road, to me it's not a position where you have to make a decision on the coach. But I think the whole fire him right now stuff is a step too far. But let's get into, why are they struggling to generate offense? Why is this team unable to evolve from the team they were last year? Is it coaching? Is it the players not having a hard, easy time figuring it out? Is it some of the injuries that have happened this year? Or is it a personnel issue as far as management not having enough players that can help them play the style they want to play, particularly on the back end? And not to cop out, I just think it's too early to say, oh, it's Tocchet's fault 100%. Mm-hmm. You know, and that's where we need more information, more games, and more data to really find out what's going on here. But there is a clear issue with how this team is moving the puck out of its own zone. And there is a clear issue, Bick, about what they're doing in the offensive zone. And
they're not generating anything in the middle of the ice. They're not generating rush chances. They're at the very bottom of the league as far as creating offense goes. And I know through clear sights, and Kevin Woodley mentioned this, that before JT Miller and Hronek got injured, the Canucks were doing okay in generating chances and goals, but that's really fallen off. It seems like they haven't been able to get back to doing that, let alone getting back to where you were last season.
Yeah, I'm just going to take a quick cursory glance here. I do feel like most of the shots tonight did come from forwards. Besser had two. Garland had four. Hoglander and Suter each had one. Yeah, the only D-man tonight that had two shots or more was Quinn Hughes, and he had three. So it wasn't even like the traditional night of, oh, they took too many from the point, even though there was a lot of shots from the perimeter. But, like, it's just such a struggle to get to that key area. You know, traditionally we've seen them just get reduced to getting it in deep, putting up to the point, just trying to get those deflections and rebounds, you know, chaos moments, which, again, for me, translates to the second season, but it's like any sort of offensive creativity that just does not seem to exist right now in the offensive zone.
Yeah, I know. Somebody's texting in, the logic does compute that on home road splits at home, Tocchet has more sway on the road. He has less say on deployment, etc. But what about how they're generating and defending? You can talk about all those things all you want as far as deployment and who has last change and all those things, but it's more about systemically how you're playing and how you're protecting in front of your net. And that's not happening consistently. Like, look at the games and how they've defended and how they play the team game on the road versus the home games. And I know we talk about the save percentages, but if you break that stuff down, it goes beyond deployment. You know, like, I get the deployment stuff, but what we're talking about here isn't about, you know, who's on the ice against whom. If anything, you should have the advantage when you have the deployment on your side. And I don't even think that Tocchet overdoes the deployment stuff. I think it generally rolls through four lines. I think that stuff is somewhat overrated. Like, Quinn's out there every second shift, for instance, right? And I think it's one of those things where I don't know why, but they're just not playing to their identity on home ice consistently enough.
650. This one coming in from Reed in Alberni Valley. Another flaccid outing from the Canucks. Not one Canuck has any game-to-game consistency. No emotion. And by emotion, I'm not talking about JT Miller slamming the gate and pouting on the bench. The Canucks were boring. And last year was an anomaly. 650, Bob and Victoria. Canucks performance tonight, nothing short of a disaster. Feel sorry for Demko and the paying fans. Sickening. Something needs to change. And finally, Lucas from Langley. Canuck had a tape-to-tape pass for the life of them. Too many times, Canucks are reaching for passes. Tocchet's dump-and-chase system for the O-zone doesn't work as the players are flat on their feet. Yeah, that happens a lot, to be honest. It shouldn't. And that's where you talk about, like, delayed decision-making. Are you looking to do too much? And suddenly then you're just dumping it in. But guys have to pull up at the blue line all of a sudden rather than hitting the line with any semblance of speed. And it makes it look far slower than it needs to be.
Yeah, it absolutely does. This one here says, man, some of the fans just need to calm down. What are we expecting with a banged-up team through the whole year? Smoke a joint. Chillax is what this text message says. You know, always do everything you do responsibly.
I would say, though, too, as far as, you know, banged up team, if we hadn't seen so many performances on home ice, as you said, like, what's the benefit of doubt on this? There's not a lot of leeway here for fans to say, oh, well, like, this is a one-off. Even if they are banged up, even if they are having a bug go through the room, it's happened so often here on home ice, and it's something that needs to be corrected.
Yeah, 100%. All right, keep your thoughts coming into our text inbox. We are going to get to the Canucks head coach. That is coming up next, plus Jim Rutherford. We have both those ready for you. We're going to play in the back-to-back and get into everything the coach said, plus what the Canucks president had to say on the Canucks Central post-game show presented by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment. Let Kubota do your heavy lifting. Visit them online at dleamc.com. More coming up next on the home of your Canucks, Sportsnet 650.
Miss any part of Halford and Brough in the morning? Subscribe to the show wherever you get your podcast and don't miss an episode.
This is the Canucks Central postgame show.
Join the discussion on the official home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650
and the Sportsnet Radio Network.
McAvoy held in. Left point for Marchand. Down the boards for Pastrnak. Top of the left circle. Side of the goal. Set in front. Marchand scores! Pretty set up from the side of the net by none other than the former Canuck Elias Lindholm, and Brad Marchand does the Hulk Hogan with his hand up to his ear. with the reaction from the crowd at Rogers Arena, but the Bruins get a power play goal and take a 1-0 lead.
And it's a great play set up by the Boston Bruins. Marchand ends up going back door and getting the, you know, basically empty net back door, but at the same time, Zacha goes from the back door up into the middle of the slot a little bit and then starts to back out towards the faceoff dot. And that throws Carson Soucy off a little bit. He thinks that's the only player behind him and loses track of Marchand, where Demko can't quite get over to try and close up that far side. It's a great play. Canucks need to start battling back because it's already 1-0 now.
Canucks go on to lose 5-1 on home ice against the Boston Bruins, and this is the Canucks Central Postgame Show presented by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment. We'll get to more of your thoughts on the text inbox, 650-650, coming up in a little bit. But first, let's get to the thoughts of the Canucks head coach. Let's go to the podium, brought to you by Tiletown.
Rick, this seems to be a trend with this team, struggling in first periods in particular on home ice. Seemed to be the case again tonight. It was particularly poor. What is going on that is having this team struggling right out the gate?
Yeah, I think in the first period, I think we iced the puck four times when we shouldn't have. It led to two goals. So I saw some guys a little bit nervous early. We were dumping the puck, and when we did give it to a winger, he would dump it in instead of holding onto pucks. So then all of a sudden you give them two, you know, they get the power play goal, they get the other fluky, another goal, it's 2-0, now you're chasing the game. You know, then we iced it again. I mean, to me, the icing is inexcusable for all of us. I'm not just blaming the defense, it's the forwards. It's like, that to me just gives the other team a lot of juice.
It seemed like you kind of had your defense pairings in a blender pretty much all night. Were you just not seeing what you wanted to see from the pairings that you started the night with?
Yeah, I've talked to Footy. We had to try to find this. There's the weak side was open a bunch of times tonight. We just couldn't find it. We didn't see it tonight. Skate four or five more feet, hit the weak side. It's open. Instead of it, we're jamming it up the strong side. That happened. And then we had some, you know, spurts, like I said. I think we had 54, 60 attempts at the net, getting our shots blocked. We talked about a certain play we wanted to do against Boston. We didn't do it till maybe in the third. So that's a little, I think that pisses the staff off because we had a good game plan. But somehow when you chase the game or you're a little bit, when you got the puck, it's like a hot potato. All of a sudden, I don't want it. So what do? You just get rid of it. So I think we got to calm the waters, and even when you're down to nothing, you still can make plays. You know, we don't have to dump the puck in. We don't have to just throw it off the glass. There's plays to be made. You know, we were just watching the video after the game. There's 10 to 12 foot passes available, and we're flipping pucks. Not just the defense. It's a group, but some guys tried tonight. So I can't throw everybody under the bus. Some guys really worked hard tonight.
Rick, you said with Thatcher coming back and all the work he's put in, it should be easy for the team to get up for these games. Again, both of his starts now, it seems like he's been outshot on tonight, a lot of scoring chances against. Why do you think that's happening?
Yeah, I don't know. A couple of fluky goals, not his fault. You know, you're hoping we'd play a little bit better in front of him, especially early in the start of the first period.
And on a positive note, Max gets his first NHL goal tonight.
Yeah.
What has he brought, and how great is it to see him finally get one?
Yeah, no, he's couple assists last game. You know, he's making most of his opportunity.
We got a chance to talk to Quinn tonight. What do you make of how he's played since he took that stick to the face?
Yeah, I mean, he's trying. He's trying to push the pace. You know what I mean? He's, you know, his effort's always 100% every game.
You made some changes to your forward lineups as well. Did you see anything that you would like to experiment with going forwards?
I just want to get Garz up there. I thought Millsy's line was actually pretty good. They control the play. And I thought, you know, get Garz out there with him, get us back in the game.
You've been a little inconsistent at home, obviously, putting it mildly. Do you still get surprised? Does a night like this surprise you after what you saw two nights ago?
Yeah, I just didn't understand the first period. I mean, we have plays to be making. We're icing a puck. Or a forward's got a puck with 5 feet of good ice to take it and make a play, and we dump it in. I don't know if that's nervousness. I don't know what it is. I don't know. You know, we had a day off yesterday. We had some guys under the weather. maybe having a day off. Guys are, I don't know. I gotta. We gotta try to figure it out quickly.
And you said to us this week that you think some of the home stuff is now mental. It's in guys' heads about playing at home a night like this. Does that make it worse?
Well, I don't know why. Yeah, I don't know why, but guys are tense at home for whatever reason. Like we seem a little bit more relaxed on the road to make a play here for some reason. You know, we're getting it and we just want to punt it as soon as we get it. So we got to figure that out. You know, you got to keep working at it.
In the second period, you're down 3-0, but you get a power play opportunity. Yeah. It seemed like Boston had the best chances on that power play.
Yeah.
What is not connecting with your zone entries, with your passing? Why are they getting the better chances on that?
Well, we went rogue a little bit. All of a sudden, what happens with that unit, when things don't go our way, we start becoming individuals. That happened last year. And for most part, the power play has been actually pretty good lately, the last 2-3 weeks. We just went back in that mode, maybe because we're down 3-0. Something didn't work early, and then all of a sudden, we start trying to be individuals. You can't be individuals even when you're down 3-0. Yep.
Are you getting enough emotional fire in this type of situation when you're down that much? Are you getting enough emotional pushback from your team?
For some guys, yeah. We have, let's face facts, four or five guys, they're struggling. They're struggling to get emotionally invested in the game, and that's my job to get these guys. Those certain guys, we gotta find another gear from them. They gotta understand that it's the NHL, and you can't play one good game and then two bad. This is a game, a sport, the NHL, where you have to be jacked up to play the game. You have to be emotionally in the game, and sometimes the guys are takes them like 30 minutes to get in the game for whatever reason.
Rick, when you look at this team last year, one of the traits, one of the strengths, was that it was even keeled throughout.
Yeah.
Have you noticed a difference in that this year in terms of how this team reacts to wins and losses?
Yeah, you have to ask some individuals. I don't know from a team standpoint because, you know, we preach even keel. You know, come to practice the next day, whatever happens in the day before. I don't know. It's a good question. But, you know, around here, we try to preach even keel.
And you talk about reset and refocus. I mean, given a loss like tonight.
Yeah.
I mean, that not only tests the players, but the staff as well, I imagine, in terms of the level of frustration. Yeah. Is that a big challenge for everyone moving forward now?
Yeah, I mean, as a coaching staff, you got to be careful. We can't be frustrated. You know, I'm sure a couple of coaches are frustrated because we had a game plan that some guys didn't execute the game plan for whatever reason. So I think sometimes as a coach, you take it, not personal, but you get pissed about it, right? But, you know, like I said, this group bounces back. Got to give them a lot of credit there, obviously. But, you know, I just think there were some plays out there to be made. And for whatever reason, we were a little tense tonight.
That's Canucks head coach at the podium. From vision to reality, Tile Town has everything you need for your tiling project. See them today in Victoria, Richmond, Langley, and online at mytiletown.ca. So the Canucks head coach, not overly pleased with what he saw. And a common refrain, we had a good game plan. The players didn't execute it.
Man, that's happened a lot this year.
You know what? The more he brings it up, the more and it's like, okay, fair critique, but how come they're not executing your game plan?
That's the thing, right? It's fine when it happens once. You can hear it 2 to 3 times. I'd have to go back through the notes to see how many times he's brought up, like, we had a good game plan today.
Yeah.
I look, this happens so often. I'm finding it hard to believe that the game plan is that unimpeachable. I do think it's a lot of the players' efforts. And there are nights like tonight where we can look at it and say, hey, it doesn't matter what the coach does. When you're just overskating pucks, like loose pucks, and you don't even drag it with you, it's on the players. And, like, it's true. But that is a lot of times this season where it's like, oh, the game plan. Like, we told them what to do, and they just didn't do it. That's kind of your responsibility, too.
Well, and you have to get – I mean, he did say it's my job to get it out of him, and he was referring to 3 to 5 guys who are not emotionally bringing it enough. And it's not hard for you to point fingers and wonder who it is. He mentioned, you know, have a good game one game and then not be good. I think we all look at Pettersson, of course, and he's been careful not to criticize him. Maybe he's mentioning him. Heinen had a good game last game. We talk about a soft play he made, trying to go towards the board. It's like emotionally it's not there. And I'm not saying he's a big problem, but just kind of going through a list of forwards that have kind of had a hard time making that impact. I mean, we all kind of know who the forwards are, right? You start going through that list, and you need to
he talked about he needs to get more out of them. The one thing he mentioned, and this is a common refrain we get from fans, why is he not coaching the team to be good offensively? Why is it dump and chase hockey? And this is something he said a lot. Again, he says, we had plays to make. We're dumping and chasing too much. We're throwing it off the glass and out, and we're just flipping the puck out. Mm-hmm. We have time to make plays. We're not making the plays. But again, it's the same thing he brings up. The players aren't executing, right? So it's one of those things. You got to get through to them. But I don't think the system –
it's such a catch-22 because
right.
a guy skates into a problem. Suddenly it's like, oh, just
– dump it in, yeah.
If you don't have a play to make, just dump it in.
Are they confused, do you think, about time and place? And when you don't have the confidence in a playoff instinct, you're thinking, and then you're making the wrong play, and then you make the safe play only, and you know, you're just reverting to being safe. Maybe that's part of the issue. But, yeah, the Canucks are not very expansive with how they play.
No.
And we talked about it with Landon. There's so many times they had opportunities, they didn't take them, and that's what the coach is referring
to. Passed up opportunities.
But I don't think his system is be bad offensively. Like, I really don't think that is what he's trying to do, but he's not getting them to execute it, whatever it is, right? And I think that's a big part of that frustration.
Yeah, and it's the game plan stuff for me that's been referenced so many times. Well, then is there a way to simplify the game plan? Right? If it's not being executed, is it too complex? Is it too simple that's being capitalized? Like, what is the issue that why this keeps cropping up? And if it's, you know, guys not being emotionally invested, well, that's a reflection of you. And yeah, there's a bit of a, you know, raising of the hand here of that's part of my job. But this has happened with far too much frequency here for this to be what, game number 30 today?
Yeah.
Game 29. It's been referenced of game plan. I want to say at least 5-6 times here. That's way too much.
Yeah, it is. All right, we'll talk more about some of the things that the head coach had to say, more of your reaction to it coming up in a little bit. But let's also get the thoughts of the Canucks president, Jim Rutherford. He was on After Hours after the game and asked about some pretty interesting situations, Brock Besser being one of them with his contract situation, and also what the Canucks may be looking to do on the trade front. Here is Jim Rutherford on After Hours.
We welcome the Canucks president of hockey operations. The last time Jim Rutherford was on the show was in the midst of a tough start, I think just over 2 years ago, and you'd lost badly to the Buffalo Sabres that night. So I guess welcome to your final appearance on After Hours. We're not going to dwell on tonight's game except to say that it does raise the question about your team's record at home and lack of consistency, Ray.
So, Jim, last year, almost 71% of the points that were available you won at home. This year, it's half a step forward, a step back. Like, how does that happen for you guys?
Well, we beat ourselves at home sometimes. I'd say probably two or three games this year. We don't play with the same urgency at home. On the road, we seem to be more comfortable. You know, like most teams like to put on a little more of a show at home, and I think we try to do that sometimes. We're coming off. We're in the middle of playing a lot of games, but all teams do that, and so we get a lot of days off. We didn't practice yesterday. We've had a couple of other home games where we didn't practice, and we didn't play well. So we have some adjustments to make, obviously, but they're fixable. But we better fix them quick because you can't be a playoff team with a record like we have at home.
I was just going to ask you, so you say we'll fix them, but you know, how what's the balance between patience and fix?
Well, the patience, it's two different things. The patience for the front office is one thing, and the patience for the coach is another thing. So, you know, that's really up to talk. He does a terrific job. He's been dealt a different hand this year than he was last year. He's had a lot more things to deal with, and I believe he's done a really good job, and he'll figure this out. From the front office point of view, we're around the 30-game mark, and we have to start to make decisions. We talk every day about how we make the team better and what changes we might have to make, and we're at that period now.
Tonight's loss aside, for as tough as it was, if we look at the big picture, Jim, your team has established itself as a contender. If we go back to where you were 2 years ago when we had you on this program, I think your quote that night was, I'm the same as fans and everybody else. It's getting frustrating. It's hard to watch. So the backdrop for this interview is different. Have the Canucks established themselves as contenders happened even faster than you thought it would?
Well, we took a big step last year. There's no doubt about that. And probably a bigger step than we all thought we could take in 1 year. And now the key to that is maintaining what we gained last year.
Mm-hmm.
And we lost some players, good players, and we've added some good players. So, but like I said a little bit earlier, you know, we've dealt with a number of issues here. All teams have to do it. But we just got to get everybody in place and get settled down, and we're certainly a good enough team to be a playoff team, and then see where we go from there.
To come within a couple of goals of getting to the conference final says something about establishing yourself as a contender. You have spoken in the past about a three-year window of opportunity to win here. Quinn Hughes' deal is up in 3 years, Demko before that. And so Jordan asks, with the team's window opening, do you not think it's time to open the cupboards a bit and bring in some high-level talent to bolster the current roster? Quinn Hughes is a once-in-a-lifetime player, and we need to utilize every season we have of him.
Well, I think that's a fair point that person's making, but it's not like you can go to Costco and just pick up one or two of these players that you think can help you. You know, we're living in a cap world. It's hard to make deals. But yes, the point that this person's making, we need to add a couple of players to really give ourselves a chance to contend.
Speaking of expiring deals, Brock Besser is on one. If you can't get the 40-goal scorer signed to an extension by the trade deadline, what then?
Well, we'll deal with that when the time comes. You know, right now we're evaluating his situation. You know, the key is going to be what that contract looks like, what the term looks like, all those things. I mean, it's like all contracts. The player's going to have a different opinion of what the team has, and we'll continue to watch this really close.
Rick Tocchet, Ray.
When you came in and you made the coaching change, so often we hear, you know, where's the new blood? Where's the new guy come from? But really, you have to have a comfort with how a coach will deal with the good, the bad, the development.
Yeah.
So you knew Rick and have known him a long time. What made him the right guy? And with the hand he's got this year, the injuries, Dakota Joshua and his situation. Now you've got Hronek and Miller's out and in. How does he deal with that? How do you have confidence knowing that this is down the road somewhere? There's always going to be tough times.
Well, we worked together in Pittsburgh, so I knew him really well. He handled some of the tougher situations in Pittsburgh. He handled those for Mike Sullivan. And we knew how he coached as a head coach because we watched him when he was in Arizona. So very familiar, good communication. And he communicates really well with the players. When players are struggling or there's issues, he's a guy that can sort that out.
Jim, you have seen how the game has evolved. Hockey has no choice but to keep pace with the rest of the world. So I have a question about JT Miller. This is not to pry, but he needed time, and you gave it to him. I just wonder if 15 years ago, maybe as recently as 10 years ago, if one of your best players came to you as a general manager and said, I need time for a reset, what might your reaction have been?
Always. Always when a player's asking for that, you have to give them that time. And, you know, I mean, we work at this business to win every game and do the best we can. But we also have to realize these are people. Everybody has issues to deal with at certain times. And when a player reaches out for some help, that's when you say, you need some time off. Go for it.
Did it ever happen to you in your career as a general manager before this?
It's been a long career, so I can't remember all the situations. But I do believe that that it has happened before. But when you talk about 15 years ago, we would have never dealt with that person the same way. We didn't have all the tools that we have now to help people. But I do believe that I've given players some time away. You know, maybe not a month, but maybe a week or just even a few days. And it happens all the time. It happens a lot more than people think.
A follow-up. Was JT Miller's request for a leave personal from him, or was it a team initiative?
He requested the time, and it was for personal reasons.
And that answers the question about the scurrilous rumors that are out there these days, I guess.
Yeah, that's it's unfortunate. You know, I get it. The world we live in and the sports world we live in, there's going to be all kinds of rumors, and people make up trade rumors and all these things. But when a player's in a situation where he's taken a leave for personal reasons, it's very disrespectful for people without any information to go off of to start some of these rumors. It's really unfortunate.
When you sign a player like Jake DeBrusk to a lucrative deal with term, you expect him to produce, and he has been for you. And then there are economy contracts, I guess we could call them. So I want to ask you about one of them, and that's Kevin Lankinen. You picked him out of the free agent bin in training camp. He shut out the Stanley Cup champions here on Thursday night. He's won 14 of 21 games for you. How can you not be surprised?
Well, we're not surprised that he's played well. I guess it's easy to say that we are surprised that he has the record he has and set the record on the road for most wins in a row and all those things. But, you know, we had a goalie situation that was tough that we were watching with Demko's injury. We were well aware that Lankinen had overplayed his hand when he was trying to get his bigger contract. And our goalie coach had coached him before, and we told him, you talk to him every day so we know exactly what he's doing. We were kind of playing a little bit of poker there. You know, of course, he's trying to get a bigger contract. We don't have much cap space. But we were keeping an eye on that situation for about a month, and then it got to the point it got close to camp, and he decided to come here. Thank goodness.
Kiefer Sherwood, Ray.
I don't know that I had 176 hits in my career, and he's got them in 2.5 months. The energy he plays with, when you got a good look at him in the playoffs, and he comes in, he's been everything you ask for, I guess, eh?
He really has. I mean, we were looking for that type of player. You know, it was Lafferty was a guy that brought a little bit of that last year. Kiefer certainly brings more than Lafferty did. But he can play up and down the lineup. He's such a good team guy, and he drives the game some nights, and that's what you need.
Last question comes from Jess, and she asks, getting back to goaltending, is it possible, because Demko's up in a couple of years, Lankinen's going to need a raise, is it possible to keep both Demko and Lankinen together?
Yes.
That's it? Would you care to expand?
Well,
it's live TV.
I can. We know what Demko's going to make next year, yeah. Okay? We don't know what Lankinen's going to want. But, man, you need goaltending to win. Mm-hmm. And I think that maybe in this case we'd look at a little bit more, putting a little more money in on the goaltending side of it maybe than we would somewhere else.
Perfect. That's where we'll end it. Jim, thanks for your time. Okay. Greatly appreciate you joining us
tonight.
On a tough night.
Yeah, it was.
That is Canucks president Jim Rutherford on After Hours. And interesting there on the end on Kevin Lankinen, Vic,
yeah.
That maybe they would be willing to spend a little extra to have both goalies.
We'll chat more about it on the other side, but there was some revelatory things from that chat.
We'll talk about trades. He mentioned that, what they need to add. Brock Besser.
Right before IMAC, let's talk trades.
Yeah, he's going to love that. plus, we'll get back to some of the things that Rick Tocchet said as well as more of your reaction on the Canucks Central post-game show presented by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment on the home of your Canucks, Sportsnet 650.
Hey, it's Dan Riccio.
And Satyar Shah.
Join us for Canucks Central, where we will set up the game and break down the latest around the Canucks.
4 to 6 p.m. and post-game on Sportsnet 650 and wherever you get your podcasts.
This is where you talk Canucks. You're listening to the Canucks Central post-game show
on the official home of the Canucks,
Sportsnet 650 and the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Garland was just out there at 4-on-4, so we'll see if this Sasson audition is more than a shift or not. As Myers tried to shot for the point, it's blocked. Koepke's going to break away the other way in on Demko, who robbed him with a glove. Great save. Cole Koepke was in clean from center on Thatcher Demko, but the Canuck netminder denied him to keep this a 5-0 game.
Demko's up in a couple years. Lankinen's going to need a raise. Is it possible to keep both Demko and Lankinen together?
Yes.
That's it. Would you care to expand?
Well, I
can. It's live TV.
I can. We know what Demko's going to make next year, yeah. Okay? We don't know what Lankinen's going to want. But, man, you need goaltending to win. Mm-hmm. And I think that maybe in this case we'd look at a little bit more, put a little more money in on the goaltending side of it maybe than we would somewhere else.
Canucks president Jim Rutherford, after a 5-1 loss against the Boston Bruins on home ice, he was on After Hours with Scott Oak and Ray Ferraro and answering questions about his team 29 games into the season. And this is the Canucks Central postgame show presented by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment. We'll get some of your texts and your phone calls coming up in a bit, so hang on to your phone lines and we'll get some of your text messages. But let's break down some of the things that were said. A lot of reaction and questions about what Rutherford said, and you heard the clip coming in about Kevin Lankinen. And we know, based on the comps and what we've talked about in the past, Bic, about goaltending, that if you look at Joey Decord,
who, I was just going to reference
it. I mean, that's the number. I mean, yeah. It's Joey Decord. It is, right? I mean,
it's ruined a lot of the projections.
It has, because Ville Husso before that was the guy who had a 3-year deal at 4 and change, mm-hmm. went a similar season to Lankinen and really good numbers, but off of, you know, half a year or 1 year, really, and then got paid. Well, Decord is the next guy, and he got how many years?
5x5. It was $25 million.
Yeah, $25 million, and very little track record, but one good season, right? Lankinen, similar, and even the track record might be slightly bigger heading into this season for Lankinen, right? And the numbers have been somewhat similar as well. So you're looking at anywhere from $4 to $5 million, that range, I think is fair for Lankinen, $4 to $5 million. That means the Canucks will be willing to spend anywhere from $9 to $10 million, in theory, on goaltending. And if you look at where the cap is, Is $10 million the new $6-7 million combined for your goaltending if the cap gets closer to $100 million?
Yeah.
Right? Like, you want to spend around 8% maybe, right, 9%, but would you do 10%, slightly more, right? Like he mentioned, maybe you're willing to spend a little bit more on goaltending because of the backbone it gives your team.
Yeah, him referencing the fact that, like, goaltending is important. That, to me, stands out quite a bit. Because, you know, historically, as you mentioned, like the nice price point was around 7-8%. And if you go through historic Penguins teams and Hurricanes teams, you know, Jim Rutherford teams have spent about 8% on goaltending, how it averages out. Some years it would be as low as 5, some years as high as 11, but eventually it comes around to about 8%. Man, if the way he phrased that question was about next year, of like, yeah, next year we could get them in, because don't know what Lankinen's number, but yeah, you go through the comps here, like, you're looking at least $4.9 million, probably $5 million.
Yeah,
there's the Decord one. You know, Jack Campbell signed a 5x5 as a free agent at age 31. It's right around that Lankinen age range. Like, there's comps here to put it pretty pricey.
Yeah, and at best, it's like 4.5 or something along those lines, like at the lowest number. So that's kind of the range you're looking at, right? So it looks like they would be prepared. The question is, how much does Lankinen want to get paid? Does he think he can get more on the open market?
And also what role.
Right? Now, I don't think it precludes the Canucks from signing. Knowing this management team, they could sign Lankinen and then still sign Demko and then make a move on the other goaltender after next season. So I don't think them signing Lankinen means Demko's not coming back.
Sure.
They would always make the right decision. But given Demko's injury history, you know, how willing are you to give him a long-term contract? And if you're not, do you want to risk losing Lankinen in this offseason, right? So I think that's also part of the equation here. You can buy yourself some more time. So interesting thoughts on Kevin Lankinen. On Brock Besser, Bick, you know what? I saw some of the tweets coming out about Jim Rutherford's appearance and about what he said about Brock Besser. I don't think he said anything that's really all that catchy. He says, like any negotiation, the player and the team are going to have different evaluations. But we'll kind of see where it goes. Like, he was, he didn't say anything compelling about wanting to keep him, but he also didn't say anything icy about him. He said, we'll deal with Besser when the time comes, evaluating his situation. The key is going to be what the contract looks like, and obviously you're going to have different evaluations. I don't think he said anything.
I think the tone is a lot different than the actual content there. Because when you hear it, it was very relaxed, the manner in which he said it. And, you know, we've heard him talk about Bo Horvat, and it felt like
he
a
said,
tone.
We'll trade him if we can't sign him. He didn't say anything about trade.
It was far different the manner in which he spoke about that then.
He didn't say anything about it's going to be difficult. He didn't say anything about it's going to be trade. We're going to trade him. I do think, reading through the lines, too, and this is something I've mentioned on the show, the Canucks, to keep Besser, he's going to have to take a little bit less than Vancouver. So the 8.75 that Konechny got over 8, that's not happening here.
It's just
Can you live with 8? Can you live with 8? Like, that's kind of where it's at, right? So if Besser wants every single dollar and wants every, you know, as much as possible, it may not be in Vancouver. Can they get close but a little bit less? And I think that's going to be kind of the middle ground. I bet you the Canucks would love to get him under eight. They would love to get him under eight. And if they get him under eight, honestly, I think you have to sign him because you can't replace that at under $8 million. At eight is when you got to make a decision. The Canucks, I don't think, wanted to pay Hronek over seven, but sign him for 7.25. Where is that line going to be with Brock Besser, right? So I think that's something to watch. But I didn't think what he said was necessarily closing a door on Besser or being pessimistic. I think he kept a pretty even keel on Besser's situation. And what we do know as well is Besser wants to stay, and he says he wants to be here long term. So
that
we'll
sounded like an exec who's playing the cards.
Yeah,
right.
Exactly.
I'm not showing my hand just yet.
He didn't show his hand. That's the perfect way.
We'll answer the question in a certain way and be like, yeah, we'll deal with it when the time comes. But that's still part of the negotiation process, right there. And that to me is. The hard line negotiating that I think we've come to see from this management group.
Yeah, a few more things on him. The first one, on JT Miller, he said, and it's something that you know we've reported on Canucks Central this past week too, that it was JT who asked for the leave. It wasn't the team pushing him out. We don't know the reasons. We don't need to know the reasons. He can deal with that himself. And he put that to bed, and he talked about the rumor stuff that's kind of come out about the reasons why and him being on the trade block, and a lot of that stuff has been, you know, labeled untrue, which we all agree with. I know Friedman spoke about a couple days ago with Miller coming back, the locker room having to bend a little bit. Now, that to me is separate from the issue. Like I talked about on the show yesterday, if you missed it, you can listen to Canucks Central, that issue about, you know, dynamics is different from the reasons why JT was away, and they're two separate things, right? But obviously something to really to keep an eye on at the very least about the evolution of the team as time goes on here. But the other thing he mentioned on Rick Tocchet, Bick, before we get to the trade stuff, he says we believe in Rick Tocchet. He says he's done a great job with the hand he's been dealt. When he said hand he's been dealt, that to me was taking a lot of pressure off of him as far as expectations and as far as what's happened and why it's happened. That the hand he's been dealt, if anything, he's done a good job with that hand is how the president sees it.
And also reference that he can figure it out and the staff can figure it out of some of the problems they've had. But again, as mentioned, couple of home games that they didn't practice. Similar language that Rick Tocchet was using as well about didn't practice the day before some games, and we don't play well. We have adjustments to make. We better do things quick because we don't have a record. Because you can't have a record like this at home and expect to go to the playoffs.
Yeah, and that's obviously something that has to change and get better. But the biggest thing he said was he thinks they can be a playoff team. Of course, he thinks they have good pieces here, but he says we're a couple players away from really contending.
This is a catchy quote, and it doesn't mean he's wrong. It's absolutely factual. But just a reminder that like your preseason roster is not necessarily reflective of what your playoff roster can be. And so if you just apply that same logic to last year, who did they go and add? Zadorov and Lindholm through the course of the season. So if there's the step that you want to take, yeah, like you would expect this team to bolster. So I look at that, and I think it's catchier than it is. But if you want this team to, if they're in the mix, they're going to go make additions. And that's from their eyes, like this is the thing that could push them over the line. It's not as if they were having so much success last year and they said, you know what, we don't need to do anything. They still went out and acquired players to try to make it better. I think if they're in the mix, Pacific Division seed, wild card spot, they're still going to make their additions.
Yeah, I think so too. But it's very clear that they need a couple of pretty sizable additions, right? Like on the back end, they need a legitimate top four defenseman. You might even argue they may need two defensemen, given how the number six guy hasn't really panned out either, right? So if you're looking at upgrading somewhere, you can even make the case you need somebody else too as a 6-7 to give you that extra boost. And you might need a forward with how things have gone. You know, I mentioned this on the show this past week that as for all the talk about defensemen, like keep an eye on forwards that, you know, I don't think they love what they've gotten from a couple of guys. I know the coach mentioned, you know, Heinen even the other night, and I've talked about him, the contract he signed. Like, if he's making 2.25 and playing on your fourth line, and he's not being the guy that can move up and down like they had hoped, plus he's not playing with this fire in his game, then what's the value here, right? So I do think that's something to really watch, too, forward-wise for the team the next little while.
It'd be interesting to see how they make some of the money work here, right? Because they're Desharnais, Heinen, like Hoglander, who's got $3 million next season. Not much, obviously, this season. But there's options, and if they're going to get back to the accruing stage at some point here soon, what options does that open up to start being in the positive as far as cap space?
Yeah. And I think that's going to be the thing to watch with Vinny Desharnais, who Elliot Friedman mentioned the Canucks are shopping and wanted a draft pick for, but may be willing to do just about anything. And to me, that says if they can't trade him, they'll put him. If there's a team that says, hey, we'll take him off your hands, but take this contract from us,
right?
They'll be like, we'll call your bluff. We'll put him on waivers, and maybe somebody claims him. And if they don't claim him, once he gets sent down, he's easier to move, and then maybe you make a swap where you take on a cheap contract or something, and you just get him out the door. But to me, all options is something along those lines, mm-hmm. not send him down to Abbotsford. He may end up there if things continue going this way, but I can see that being a possibility. He goes on waivers to see if anybody calls somebody's bluff that's hanging around the situation.
I'd be curious about timeline, though, too.
Yeah.
Is it, you know, we're pretty close to the roster freeze.
Well, it seems with all the talk here that they're trying to get this done before the roster freeze if possible. The question is, can you, right? And that's going to be the thing.
It's going to be here before we know it. It's next Friday.
It's quick. Yeah. It's less than a week away at this stage. And I think that pretty much covers what he had to say, right? And we spoke about a lot of stuff that Rick Tocchet said earlier, too. And what, you know, just kind of keeps coming back to is they had a game plan, players didn't execute. And, you know, it's fair. People have texted in and say, hey, isn't that your job to get them to execute if the same thing keeps happening? And something, obviously, to keep an eye on here.
It's either, like, either the game plan isn't being followed, which is a huge problem, or there is a different game plan and it's not good enough. So either way, it's a problem.
Yeah.
I'm puzzled that that's constantly referenced because it's essentially saying, like, hey, yeah, they're not listening to me.
Yes.
That's a problem.
Yes.
That's a big problem.
100%. All right. Keep your thoughts coming into our text inbox. We'll take a couple more as the show goes on here, but let's also get to the phone boards. We've had some people waiting patiently to get on before iMac joins us. Let's go to Lions Bay where we have Jose on the line. Jose, thanks for calling in, buddy. What are your thoughts here tonight?
Hey, Seth. Hey, Vic. First of all, today's game was just obviously a disappointment compared to a Florida game. There's a couple of things I wanted to bring up. Number one, let's take a look at Elias Pettersson for a few moments. When JT Miller was gone out of the lineup for about a month, he kind of noticed PD starting to improve his game. Last two games, 0 points. I'm starting to ask myself the question, and I even looked through and did game-by-game comparison of PD leading up to the national game after JT left and then afterwards, and he was starting to pick it up. And I'm kind of wondering if just JT's presence in the lineup has any kind of impact. Is it a coincidence? Wonder what you guys think. Second, coaching. Everyone wants to dump on Rick Tocchet, the dump and chase commentary, all that kind of stuff. Here's my observation. Last year, Rick Tocchet won Coach of the Year, and he credited the coaching staff for his Jack Adams trophy. The only glaring issue I saw really last year from a coaching perspective was the power play, which wasn't very effective and clearly was not great in the playoffs. Anyway, after he wins the Coach of the Year, what happens? Mike Yeo rejects a one-year contract offer and leaves for Ottawa. He's replaced by first-time NHL assistant coach and former development coach Yogi Shcherbakovsky. Today, Yeo runs the Ottawa power play. It's ranked 27.6. Power play percentage. The Canucks power play percentage is 23.5. The number one power play in the NHL is New Jersey. Guess who runs that power play? Jeremy Colliton, right? It's number one, and it's ranked at 30.9. I like talking, but I'm starting to worry that his sole voice is wearing down the locker room. Yogi's green. Adam Foote really works with the defensemen. They are missing a seasoned associate coach who could actually design plays and be a secondary voice in the locker room. I think it's just something to look at. And certainly I've made comments about Ian Clark also and his departure having an impact on the team. My one comment in comparison is, I remember when Bruce Boudreau had his first season when he had success with the Canucks. Who was his assistant coach? Bradshaw. Next season, Bradshaw's gone, joins John Tortorella in Philadelphia. You could see a drop-off in the actual overall structure of the team. Anyways, guys, back to you.
Hey, thanks for the phone call. That's Jose calling in. And, I mean, the correlation between inexperienced coaching assistants and the lack of success compared to last year, fair point. I mean, the power play hasn't been great, but, I mean, I don't think that's also like this.
I mean, 23.8 is not bad.
No, we're not
talking about.
That's,
like, still top 10.
They need to be. I think there's more upside to it. I absolutely agree. But at the same time, we're not talking about a power play that went from, you know, top 10 to bottom 10. I mean, they finished last year. What was last year? I think they finished middle of the pack last year.
Let me bring it up here.
Like, I don't think they finished very strong. I think it was under this current percentage.
They were 22.7.
Yeah, they're just under this current percentage last season, right? And they were really cold to finish the year. They barely scored in the power play. I think they were bottom a quarter of the power play the last couple of months of the season. And you know, as far as you know, Pedersen and Miller, you know, with Pedersen's game falling off. Like, before Miller went away, Pedersen's game was like, they had some games that were good together. I don't know if it's because of that per se necessarily, but until these guys start stringing together games where they're both playing well, the question is going to be, why are these guys not both playing well at the same time? And when you're making combined $20 million nearly between the two guys, like, it's, you need both guys to be going, right? Like, it's just the reality you have to figure out, and it's something that, you know, has to start turning a corner. The coach liked Millsy's game. That's what he said. He liked how that line played. And he spoke about how a few other guys have to get going and get emotionally invested. And obviously, you can look at Pedersen's ice time tonight, 15 minutes. To me, that you know, unless Pedersen is sick and the coach was not playing him or something along those lines, it looks like a guy he was talking about, you know, not having enough tonight.
Yeah, and I think they've only had I'd have to double-check this from Florida's game, but I'm pretty sure they've only had three games this year where those two guys have played a dozen minutes at 5-on-5 and been above 55% expected goals, and they obviously won all three. It just hasn't been consistent enough for both guys to be firing and lead the Canucks to a victory. It's like some games you get one of them is going, and they put up a 70% XG, and there's Miller with a 9% or Pedersen with a 12%. It's happened a few times this year. The game just looks a lot easier when those two guys are going. I think it's the Calgary game, one of the California games, and then one right before JT's leave. It's been sparse to see games where both of those guys have tilted the ice in their favor.
Yeah, and that's something that obviously has to change. All right, let's take one more phone call before we get to IMAC, who's going to be joining us here in a little bit. Let's go to Coquitlam, where we have Caleb on the line. Caleb, thanks for calling in, and what are your thoughts here tonight?
Hey, guys. Thanks for taking my call. Hope you're having a great night so far. I've watched every game so far this season, and I don't know how many times I've said to myself, like, this has been the worst game of the year. And just off the top of my head, like, I can name the Islanders game when they lost 5-2, the Devils game, the Penguins game on the road, the Oilers game, and the Preds game. And, like, there's just no consistency with this team. I feel like they've been given such an easy schedule so far. Like, if you look at those games that they've lost to terrible teams, maybe not terrible, just like middle of the pack teams, like they could be first in the division by now. And in January, like if you check the schedule, they have a pretty easy run until January. But during January, you have to basically run the gauntlet against, I think, seven straight playoff teams. And if this team doesn't get their act together now, like how are they going to fare during January when the games start to matter even more? Just looking back to the off season, like I don't like a lot of the moves. I mean, I love a lot of the moves that the management made, but tying $5 million to Vinny Desharnais and Tyler Myers, I feel like was one of the big mistakes they made. Our defense is so slow. Can't make breakout passes. I just don't like how they chose size over skill.
Yeah.
And it sucks that now we have to try to trade out assets just to get a defenseman. Well, we could have just addressed it during free agency. And lastly, I don't think we can expect to win just throwing 18 to 22 shots a night. Like, I get analytics don't tell the whole story, but we have the worst expected goals for per 60 the entire league, and we're 30th in shots for. It's just not a recipe for success at all. And we can't draw any penalties because we don't even have possession. And, like, whenever we do, we just dump and chase. Like, I'm not saying to fire talk it, but it's just – it starts with coaching, and we just can't make adjustments. And I think teams around the league have figured out their system.
Yeah.
And Pedersen, yeah. Like, I don't really like to flame him too much, but I feel like he kind of struggles against top teams and just don't think Tocchet's game really fits him that well. And I think he needs to puck on a stick to be really effective. But anyways,
I hear you.
Thanks for the call.
Hey, thanks for the phone call, Caleb. Some good thoughts there on the team. And let's bring in the man we call the closer to triple threat. He's down. He's ready. He's got his suit on, looking dapper. You watch him on TV. You read him on digital.
Hit the music.
About to hear him on radio. He is Ian McIntyre.
The music is the best part of this night.
Oh, you're coming out of the bullpen. Suddenly the crowd goes,
I feel like such a fool. I dressed up for this.
I don't mean this, us, but I mean this.
You mean
tonight,
the game. Yes. Oh, yeah.
Boston Bruins on a Saturday night after the Canucks dusted the Florida Panthers. I don't know what happened to that team.
You brought the A suit out today.
This is my best one.
Much easier on the eyes than
this
Corbin's.
This is the ace of the staff.
You brought the A suit.
But as I often said back in the days when I was on TV with Sat, if only the suit could do the talking for me, then it would be perfect.
That would make the job a lot easier.
Old Blue Reliable.
Oh. Yeah. This is the 11th loss on home ice in 16 games, and it's a very common refrain. The Canucks, maybe not call it a no-show, but certainly a dud on home ice in front of their paying customers, and it's getting very tiresome to the people that are here watching the games and calling in, too, and I can understand why when this repeatedly happens.
Well, if you're paying, $600, whatever you're paying for your night out, for entertainment, you want to be entertained. So I understand. I totally understand the frustration. It is confounding, like that the team can be not just so different home and away, which we've seen pretty well from the start of the season. Like just go through. If the Canucks were a stock, and you watch it, the ticker over like a 2-month period, every time it dips is when they're at home. Every time it's going up is when they're on the road. But just the inconsistency from game to game is really bewildering. I mean, one of their best games, and certainly their best home game of the year, two nights ago against Florida. And, they've got Miller back. They've got Demko back. Besser has been back long enough to be healthy. Some guys, Connor Garland playing the best hockey of his life. DeBrusk scoring like he's Pavel Bure. And until Miller came back, Pettersson playing his best hockey of the season, now suddenly quiet again. But you have all of this, all these guys, all these positive things, and the group is together. And then you have tonight. I mean, how do you – I can't explain that. I know Tocchet can't explain it other than that he needs more guys engaged. I thought, by the way, that statement, we have four or five guys who aren't emotionally engaged, that was the sharpest criticism of his team as a group since the second round of the playoffs when he said after game four in Edmonton, we can't win with 12 guys.
Yeah.
And I guess maybe they had 14 tonight. I don't know. But clearly, it's not to me. And I ask Quinn Hughes this. Great of Quinn to speak to us. I mean, his mouth's a mess. But I asked him at the end of his scrum, after mostly it had dissipated, about all these players back and having this game. And he said, well, we won some games without some of these guys because of our compete level and our intensity. And that's what it's all about. In other words, you can add anyone you want to the team. I know I gather, and you can tell me on our way home what I missed with Jim Rutherford. But, I've seen snippets. And Jim has said the team needs at least another couple of players to be a true contender. Mm-hmm. Well, first, you got to get the team playing like it can be a contender on a consistent basis. I mean, we have seen it. Like, let's not.
Well, it's not like we haven't
feels
seen
like, it. It feels like some people are ready just to, give up on the team. They've done well, as we've noted many times. They've done well to harvest wins and points, mm-hmm. but we're just at the stage of the season now. And especially now that they're getting close to their full group, I mean, certainly all the key players except Roenick, you want to see some consistency now.
Yeah.
And it's not that they have to win every game, although that probably would be nice, but they have to start showing who they're going to be on a nightly basis so that there's no doubt about what their identity is and there's no doubt about what they're capable of. Well, right now, there's every time you play an awful game after a good game, well, how do you know what the next game is going to be? How do you know what team it is? I mean, it's a pretty good team because of the challenges they faced and the record that they have despite those challenges. But at some point, if you actually are going to be last year's team, and keep in mind they want to be better than last year's team, then you got to start performing with the consistency that last year's team did.
What do you make of Rick Tocchet referencing guys not following the game plan? It's been a recurring message. I think he's done it 4 or 5 times so far this season. And it, while it might be true, it feels like it's kind of an outing of like, hey, they're not listening to me. And then that feels like, and again, being honest is what we prefer in the media, but it's a lot of times referencing it now in the early part of the season.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know if he's trying to take heat off of Adam, Foot, and Yogi.
Yeah.
His staff. I think that's part of it. Especially on things like, special teams, the defense, how the team breaks out. These are kind of coaching specific things. So I think part of it is he's trying to, take some of the blame, maybe take it more on himself than on his assistants. I think that's part of it. But I think he's just also being honest that the players, some players aren't executing the game plan. If that's the case, though, I'd like to see those players held accountable.
Yeah.
Like whoever they are.
That's the thing. It's,
yeah.
He's got options to solve this.
But can he, though? Because anytime anybody asks about Elias Pettersson, he gets defensive. Overly so, right? Which tells you there's something there for him to get that defensive.
Sat, PD, PD. You always want to talk about PD, Sat.
Played 15-10 tonight, and he talked about some guys not having it emotionally. Like, you got to get the best out of your highest-paid player, and that's not happening right now. And we can talk about it being PD's fault, too, but as long as that dynamic's not happening, it's a pretty big thing, right?
Yeah, it is, but it's not just Pettersson. But that's maybe the flashpoint, but... I've covered so many coaches, I've covered so many players, and a lot of great players. Like, for as much as we feel like we've been deprived on the West Coast, there has been a pretty good run going back to Pat Quinn. I mean, a couple of years with Mike Keenan at the end of the 90s, and then the dark period of the rebuild gone wrong under Jim Benning. But otherwise, there's been some very good teams, and there's been some great players, and I've seen all kinds of dynamics between coaches and players and players in each other. The bottom line is it's always incumbent on the player to get himself going. Mm-hmm. Like if Elias Pettersson needs, and I'm just saying him because you mentioned Elias. If Elias needs a coach to get him going, then there's something fundamentally wrong with the guy you're paying $92.8 million. I mean, you have to be going, you should be going every game. And even though it's impossible to execute and be sharp and be at your best every game, you can certainly be ready to play every game. And you can have your emotional level high in every game. And again, it sounds like, I don't want people to construe this like I'm saying this is Petey's fault, because I don't think this is like the team's problems. I don't think it's Elias's fault solely, but it's always the players who bear the responsibility to get themselves ready. They're professionals, unless they want to get the coach fired and conspire to get him fired, and that's certainly not what's happening right now. In fact, this discussion about about whether it's hard for me to have it with a straight face about whether Rick Tocchet is somehow past his time now. Let's find it.
I mean, like, that's preposterous.
It is, and it doesn't reflect well on this market if a discussion like that gains traction under these circumstances, with what the record is and where the team is in its evolution. But it's always about the players. Now, I'll say this, and I mentioned accountability a couple of minutes ago, that if there are these 4 or 5 guys who aren't engaged, then don't play them as much. And you know, if you, I think you're suggesting Pete Elias is one of them.
I think if you're based on the minutes and based on the last couple of games, I can't see him benching Pedersen though. That's my point. You know what I mean?
Okay. Well, and maybe he wouldn't, but did he not rise to power, so to speak, with the mandate to hold these guys accountable?
Yeah, for sure, 100%.
To establish your culture and your standards and your expectations and hold them accountable, which was the great failing of Bruce Boudreaux. And I think is often the failing of coaches near the end of their time. That they no longer have that, either the will or the ability to hold players accountable. I'd like to see everybody held accountable.
I just wonder if that situation would just go nuclear in this market if he, for some reason, was a healthy scratch or something. I just wonder if he thinks
healthy scratch is not a real thing, but a stretch of 14 to 15 minute games, something.
Yeah, sure.
JT, obviously, as we found out later, was dealing with things. But JT played two shifts in the third period of his final game before he took his leave of absence. You know, that's not scratching a guy, it's sending a pretty clear message.
I'm just skeptical, guys, because of how gingerly he walks around that topic and anything that gets construed a certain way. That's all, you know.
I think he's just honestly sick of people asking him about Pedersen. Whenever Pedersen, it's not that. I think he was wrong in that he thought, was it Farhan who asked the question?
Yeah.
About Pedersen. I think he thought he was supposed to criticize him.
Yeah. Because
he said something about, you guys are trying to get me to say the wrong thing.
Right.
But literally with Pedersen, and Demko is this way as well with the media here, and the way that we cover the team, is that every time Pedersen has a really good game, the coach is asked about tell us how great he was. How great is Pedersen? Every time he has a crappy game, coach is asked, tell us how bad he was. Now, you know, in a way that makes sense. Like, of course, the coverage should reflect how a player is playing. But sometimes, you know, maybe we should ask those questions after three or four games or after a collective, not.
Yeah.
And you know, Demko is the same way, where if he has a good game, tell us about this great save you made. If it's a bad game, tell us about this goal. And how did this goal get in? Would you like this goal back? Which is the reason Demko said the other night when asked after his first start about the goals, he said, I want them all back, because that's the easiest way for him not to have to be dissected on every single puck that goes into his net. I just think I think it's probably how the market is. And I think as a group, I think the media does a pretty good job of covering this team, even though we are a divisive group. Like, some people think we're too tough. Some people think we're too soft.
I hear it all the time.
I think for the most part, and this isn't the easiest team to cover for a lot of reasons.
Yeah.
And the intensity and the scrutiny and sort of this feeling that there's always a lot at stake. I think the media does a very good job, but I also think that we reflect sometimes this emotional roller coaster that everybody rides from game to game.
Yeah.
That everything's either horrible or everything's either great. And the reality is, most of the time, it's somewhere in between.
Yeah.
Those players, though, also are a reflection of, like, who influences the result the most. Like, Pedersen at his best can impact 2 points. Demko, now, albeit he's coming back from injury, so that's fine. But in general, like, the reason those guys get asked the most or asked about the most is because they can dictate the outcome of the game the most.
Yeah, but people don't ask about Quinn Hughes the same way they ask about Pedersen. They don't ask about Miller the same way that they ask about Pedersen.
Yeah, well, I mean, because Pedersen is at his low point as a Canuck as far as public perception, right? Like, as far as how his performance is. All right, we're way over already. We got to let these guys go home. Ian, we always appreciate your time. Fantastic as always. Look forward to reading your latest on sportsnet.ca and hopefully talk about a win on Monday night when the Canucks. It'll be late Monday. It'll be close to midnight. Yeah. For 7:30 start.
I don't know if we'll be talking about a win, but I know. Because the team never disappoints us with material. There's always always things to talk about. And I can't tell you which Canuck team it will be, But it has the potential to be very good and very bad.
Yes, either one. It's kind of Jekyll or Hyde, but at least it's fun to talk about. Great as always. Thanks, Ian. Bick, back on the People Show on Monday and also on the post-game show as usual. Look forward to chatting with you then. Thanks to Josh Elliott-Wolf, Fast Eddie Gregory back at the studio, all of you for listening and participating. Thank you all very much as always. Have a great weekend. We'll be back at it again on Monday. This has been the Canucks Central Post-Game Show presented by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment on home of your Canucks, Sportsnet 650.